Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell.
Good morning, Roberta Hughes. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys today?
Doing very well. Charles, how are you this morning, man? I haven't seen you in a little bit.
I know. Since dinner last week.
Last week,
yeah. Last week.
Dinner. Yep.
No, life is good. Can't complain. Yeah. It's going to be better after we talk to Roberta today.
Yeah, I love that you guys are in the screen together, that you're not separate, that you're side by side.
We're a unit.
Exactly. You are, yeah.
So, you know, welcome to the show, the Conscious Vibe. We're happy to have you here. So peaceful living.
Yes.
That is all yours. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I can. So peaceful living came to be in 2018. And it was kind of the culmination of the things that I've done my whole life as a student first in college and then as a young mother. And I put these skills together and wanted to create a website that was inviting, comforting, and helped people feel like they could just stop by, get some information to bring more peaceful moments into their life.
Okay. And you've been successful with that, it sounds like.
It's beginning to grow. I feel like it was slowly starting to come together. I really just wrote a blog for the first year, and I was teaching outside of my home. I'm a yoga Pilates and meditation teacher. I was mostly teaching Pilates, and then the world shut down in 2020. And I had started this website, and then during the quarantine, I started teaching classes on Facebook Live and had this idea to start making videos. And my son, who lives here with me, he's 23. He is a phenomenal editor. So the two of us just put our skill sets together and started Wow. making yoga videos and meditation videos during quarantine.
Wait, you said 23, not
Yes.
three?
23.
Okay. So let's back up for a quick second, if you don't mind. So you grew up where?
I grew up in Sierra Vista, Arizona, which is about an hour southeast of Tucson. And I grew up from the age of 5 all the way through high school and then attended college at Arizona State. So when I listen to your show and you guys are talking about Maricopa County, it's near and dear to my heart.
I love it. So you grew up not too far from Tubac.
Not too far. I didn't really visit Tubac very much. We did There's not much to see in Tubac. No. As teenagers, our thing was to go across the border, Nogales, Douglas, go shopping for copper rings and, you know, all kinds of little things, which I don't think you can do that as carefree as I did when I was growing up anymore. So
I would agree. And what's the town that has like the copper mines?
Bisbee, Arizona. Yes.
Have you ever done the 3,000 steps little thing in Bisbee? There's like this hike, if you will. It's probably not a hike, but there's like these steps in Bisbee that you can go.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's and a cool then place. Also Tombstone.
Yes,
you know, Tombstone. All the Western culture. I've done it all. And it doesn't even feel exciting to me. It was like, oh, you know, this is just what we do in Arizona. And I remember taking my kids back to see all of those things when they were smaller and for them to see the OK Corral and all of the cowboy stuff was pretty exciting for them. They're both boys. But for me, it was just growing up. It was part of home.
Well, OK, so you ventured to ASU. Yes. When did gymnastics enter into your life?
Gymnastics. I started gymnastics in the third grade. My best friend was a gymnast. And I say that lightly because in a small town, we didn't really have competitive gymnastics at that point. Okay. It was all recreational, done on the military base. It wasn't until I was in high school that my gymnastics teacher actually opened her own gym. And I took classes there through high school. But then in college, I started coaching gymnastics. And that's where I started to find my passion as a teacher. So I was coaching and teaching and loving teaching the ages of level five. So anywhere from five-year-olds to eight-year-olds was the group of kids that I worked with. And that was my job through college. And it was really cool because it was such a high-paying job for not having to work a lot of hours. And I was doing something that I really enjoyed and loved.
Oh, no, that's awesome. Yeah. So journalism major, am I right?
Yeah. You guys know all of the things.
Yeah, we know a little bit about you.
Yes.
Enough to be dangerous.
So I actually started at Arizona State as a business major. Mm-hmm. And that came to be from my high school experience. All of my business classes, which was probably two or three business classes in high school, were really fun. I had awesome teachers. I loved marketing, those components of business. And so I get to Arizona State. I got the Maroon and Gold Scholarship for my freshman year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. That's so cool. I went tuition free, but I was failing all of my business courses. Economics, math, none of that was going well. And the only classes I was doing well in were my English classes and writing classes. So I spent some time in my advisor's office, talking to friends, just figuring out what it was I was going to do, because I was feeling a bit like a failure. And initially, I was going to major in English, but that just didn't seem very exciting to me. Once I found my way into the Walter Cronkite College of Journalism, it was an exciting place for me. And again, just teachers that inspired me, content that I loved, and I never turned back from there.
So how did you leverage that? You know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of synergy between journalism and the work that you're doing today in a lot of ways, right? Because you have content that you've developed along the way. How has that helped you in the work that you do now?
I would say I use those skills pretty much every day. I write my own content. I create my own social media content. I use it in communication with people, with my clients. Here on a podcast interview, I feel like those skill sets are applicable in my ability to teach and deliver and communicate in a way that people can hear me and understand me and feel connected to me.
Okay. And what is the climate like for the work that you do specifically in Denver? Where would you grade Denver on a readiness scale for the work that you do?
You know, interestingly enough, most of my clients are scattered all over. I even have a client in Denmark, really, who takes my classes.
Oh, okay.
So
wow.
I wouldn't consider it a local business, except for the clients that I see in person. I still teach 10 hours of Pilates mm-hmm. a week here in Denver. The climate is very rich, I would say, for mind-body practices here in Denver. But my goal is to reach more diversity, more people who are looking for learning these tools in a way that is going to assist them in leading the lives that they want to live, whether that be in leadership roles, in entrepreneurial roles, athletes. I love working with athletes. Really anyone who has the desire to train up their skill set to be more self-aware, to learn how to self-regulate, to learn how to manage stress levels. Those are the people that I love to work with.
You know what that sounds like? Huh?
Telling you, not. Well, flourishing, but it sounds like you.
Yeah.
You know, I was. Is it Pilates reformer that you do in person?
So I'm classically trained and comprehensively trained. So I can teach Pilates mat, Pilates reformer, Cadillac chair, barrel. Maybe you don't know that all of those pieces exist of equipment, but I actually became a level one master instructor with Peak Pilates, and I tried that out for a year, and it just didn't feel like the right fit for me to teach teachers. I really enjoy teaching people who have the desire to make their lives better and richer and fuller and to sleep well, to move well, to feel good within themselves. That's my passion.
So two questions. So one, what format of yoga, or is it more than just one? And then two, how do you integrate these things? You know, obviously the movements are really important, and I would assume in Pilates as well as yoga. How do you integrate them into this ability for people to have a better life or to be more well?
Sure. So let me answer the question about the type of yoga first. The type of yoga that I primarily teach to help develop self-awareness is yin yoga. And yin yoga is becoming more popular, but may not be as well known as the other modalities. It's a very passive practice, and it allows you the time and the stillness to get quiet and to start those places of self-discovery, to inspire yourself to look and investigate and to be curious about the relationship between your mind and your body and how you react to things or how you resist things or how you're able to come to a place of acceptance. All of those things I teach through the yin yoga practice. I also teach it through Pilates in a way because especially for people in leadership roles who are very type A, who need to be in motion and to have their brains involved in the process, Pilates is an easier modality because there's a lot of concentration in the work of articulating and executing a movement and then thinking about, okay, where did I feel that? How did it show up in my body? Was I resistant? Did it create fear? You know, you can start discovering and being curious about all of the things that you experience on a physical level and learn how your brain responds to them on a mental level and then how you feel them on an emotional level.
Very interesting. So the yin yoga being more passive, do you find its popularity rising quickly, or are people still sort of discovering this at a slower pace?
So I went through my yin yoga training, I want to say it was in 2004 or five. My youngest son was 2 years old, so he's 19 now. So 17 wow. years ago, okay. I went through my yin yoga training, and I was one of the first groups of people to train with Sarah Powers and Paul Grilly. I consider them the pioneers of yin yoga. Bernie Clark has written a book. I have a small acknowledgement in that book on prenatal yin yoga because that was the part of my life that I was in at the time that he wrote the book. But now I see yin yoga teachers popping up all over, and I would say it's taken about 15 years yeah. for it to gain some traction and to gain some notoriety. I know Lifetime Fitness even now teaches a version. They call it, I can't think of the name. They changed the name. They don't call it yin yoga, but it really is a form of yin yoga in their yoga program.
Wow, that's interesting.
No, I was looking at some of the things on your website and some information about you, and I noticed that there was you like the concept of like a daily ritual.
I do.
Talk about that.
So I don't know. I think I was born this way. I can even remember like being a sixth grader, and I finally got my own bedroom when I was in the sixth grade. And every Sunday, I would spend the whole day in my bedroom, and I had this whole cleaning ritual. I would do my laundry. I had a bird. I would clean its cage. Like, that's what I would do on a Sunday as a sixth grader, which is really strange, right? But I loved that I was able to create that time however I wanted it. Sunday tended to be a quieter day in our home. My father, who's African-American and a 30-year Army vet, was, you know, all about work. So Sunday, even though I was still working, it was my day to create the things that I wanted to do and just to be at peace within those rituals. That's where it initially came to be. And then as I became a mother, my ex-husband was in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot. these rituals always helped me find that feeling of home, no matter where it was that life landed us, or the Air Force landed us, I should say.
But I also saw that you're not a fan, or I shouldn't say not a fan. It's probably not a good use of or a good phrase, so to speak. But resolutions don't seem to resonate with you.
They don't. You know, for years, even I would try to force myself to set New Year's resolutions, and for whatever reason, they never felt authentic. And then at one point, I realized, you know, when we resolve to do something, it's like we're putting our minds to it, we're going to do it no matter what. And that's not really an inspirational place to begin a new year, like from a place of I'm resolved to make myself do all of these things. That's how a resolution feels to me.
You know, I'm actually with you. You know, I find myself every year, you know, resisting the idea of a New Year's resolution. What am I going to do differently this year? For me, it's about what am I going to do differently today, right? Mm-hmm. And not necessarily differently today, but how am I going to move in a different way, or how am I going to be better today versus yesterday? I think it's not a New Year thing. It's like, to me, it's a journey that you have every single day with yourself in terms of how you want to show up. And it's not about what year it is, or, you know, doing something new to resolve, to your point, but it's about how can I show up better each and every day for me and the things that I want to accomplish.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And I like to spend more time in retrospect and in celebration and acknowledgement, because I think we forget to do those things for ourselves. We're only looking towards the next thing. What could be better? What could be different? What could I do next? And when you stay in that energy of now what, you forget to reflect on how far you've come. And without that time and self-reflection and acknowledgement, I think we can not have the spirit of inspiration moving forward into the new things that await us.
It's a great way to put it.
So a couple of concepts that you talk about, I found interesting. One is making friends with your stress. Can you talk about that and tell us what that means for you?
Yeah, I've kind of experimented with this throughout my life, especially while I was raising my children and moving around, not having a lot of control over things. I don't know if either of you have children. I see pictures behind you on the wall.
That's actually us, but thank you.
I do have three kids myself.
And what are their ages?
21, 17, and 14.
Okay.
No, all right. I don't, and I'm fine.
I'm his only child.
So the only reason I asked, I think, you know, most parents understand that once you have children, you don't have control of very many things in your life anymore. Right. You can set up disciplined routines. You can set up structure. You can offer teaching moments, but you really don't have control over how your children are going to receive what you're trying to teach them. So sometimes as a parent, that can be stressful. You know, when we have really small children, we kind of have complete control of their environment. We know who they're interacting with. As they grow up, we have to have more trust and faith that the things that we have taught them are going to move out into the world with them. So the stress of being a parent alone can really wear you down over time. And I think it's similar for people who are working their way through a company, working their way through school. You don't really have a lot of control over your environment or circumstances, but you do have control over yourself, your ability to feel, your ability to communicate, your ability to acknowledge and accept things. And when I look at making friends with stress, it's learning how to recognize the things that might trigger you, because we all have triggers, and then learning things to help you have more acceptance for those triggers so they don't feel like they're taking complete hold over you in moments where you need to perform at your best or be your best or show up as the best version of yourself.
You know, speaking of children, and I think exactly, you know, what you're saying regarding stress, I mean, it can be fuel to have you perform at your best, or at least have an ability to move forward and not have it. I guess the word is to sometimes stress can basically put people in a place where they aren't able to move forward, right? They're paralyzed in a way.
It can be paralyzing.
And it can be paralyzing. Yeah. And what I find in younger generations, that there's this mental stress that is occurring in young people right now. I mean, in our community, we've had three suicides in just a matter of a few weeks of young boys and teenagers, you know, high school age. And I see this hole, and I see this sometimes in my daughter, where they feel like there's so much need to achieve certain things, that there's so much pressure that they don't know how to use stress in a positive way. I wonder how we can get this message that you just shared, you know, across to this younger generation in a way where it can truly be heard and actually be utilized for the betterment of what they want to accomplish or become in their future.
Yeah, you know, I'm so happy that you brought voice to suicide, because it's something that many of us don't talk about. And through studies, the more you can normalize the conversation that young people, especially males between the ages of 13 and 30, they're the highest risk for suicide. Ethnicity doesn't factor in as much as you would think, but it's really those ages and stages of life where men are feeling a lot of pressure to be a certain way. So I don't know if these suicides were male or female, but
all boys.
Yeah, Denver has a very high suicide rate as well. My guess is, you know, now people are being raised in front of a screen all of the time, and the screen offers stimulation for the brain, which means the brain never gets an opportunity to be at rest. So I don't know if it's only the content that people are consuming on social media as much as the continuous stimulation. And when the brain is stimulated all of the time, you're not producing melatonin, which is your hormone that allows you to get good sleep. You're maybe not being able to quiet down all of that chatter in your brain because your brain is so highly stimulated. I'm not a scientist, but I know just from practical experience, the more time I spend in front of a screen, the harder it is for me to self-regulate and to bring myself down to a place of calm and relaxation. People who are recovering from concussions, my youngest had 4 concussions. The one thing they say is no screen time because it's too stimulating for your brain. So with all of this electronic stimulation, then we have to look at the nervous system. And what do we know about people who have PTSD? It's that constant stimulation that rewires their nervous system, and now everything puts them on alert all of the time. And they really don't have the discernment of when things are safe, when things are okay, and when their bodies can truly come to rest. That being said, modalities like meditation, yin yoga, these actually activate the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is the wandering nerve that allows us to tell our bodies, all is well, everything's safe, we can rest and digest and take some respite from life. So I would say that's one skill set that we need to train up in all people, is to learn how to activate the vagus nerve, to learn how to dive into those wellsprings of energy that allow you to restore and nourish yourself. That's where your body heals. That's where your body recovers. That's where your nervous system settles, and you can become more at peace and at ease, even when life is crazy and busy and stimulating.
You know, you went exactly where, you know, as you were having, you know, that dialogue, my mind went exactly to meditation. in terms of, you know, its ability to sort of quiet the mind and become a practice is really, truly helpful. I started meditating February 15th, 2020. So literally like 2 weeks before the world sort of like fell apart with the pandemic.
Yeah. And how did that help you?
Well, I've done it every day since. So I haven't missed a day in over 2 years of meditating. And I got to tell you, I feel really weird when I say this because I think I almost feel guilty when I say this, but I've had little to no stress over the pandemic over the last two and a half years. When the, and I shouldn't say the rest of us or all of us, but I know there's been a lot of anxiety and stress, obviously discomfort, and obviously, you know, our lives were changed, you know, dramatically. I think forever, quite frankly, in terms of how we live and how we do things in life. I haven't had that level of anxiety around any of this. And I think meditation has been a major tool for me in order to be able to sort of deal with all the stresses that come along with, you know, just life in general as we know it today. And so I think that's something that, you know, is one of those tools. I know yoga is tremendously helpful. I did Bikram yoga for over 5 years and I guess the heat finally got to me, but but it's those practices are truly helpful. And I don't know that we look at them beyond the idea of, okay, this is a great way to sort of like, take care of my body, but it's also a tremendous way to take care of our minds.
Yes, it can really give you the opportunity to be curious about your mental health. And, you know, I would wonder, out of curiosity, is you said that you didn't have stress. I would say that you did have stress. You had the same stress that everybody else did.
Exactly right.
However, you had a choice through meditation. You had a choice of how you responded to the stress and how you received it, how you chose not to react to it. So you were consciously making choices to support your mental health and well-being through that time and continuing to do so through your meditation practice.
You're 100% right. I think for me, it's making a choice that I was going to appreciate the beauty of life in that moment, right? Because we all, at that time, life was so uncertain.
Tough time, yeah.
It's a tough time. It's the uncertainty of what the future looked like was just, who knew what was behind the curtain, so to speak.
Right.
But I think so many beautiful things are born out of those types of experiences in those times. I mean, our podcast was born out of that. And I think how you choose to respond in those moments or how you choose to move in life sets the table for whatever is next. And, you know, uncertainty is something that I think if we embrace that, we're all for the better when we embrace uncertainty, because it just allows you to be in a place where you realize that you don't have a lot of control over some things, but the things you can control can certainly help you navigate what's ahead.
Yeah, the one thing we can count on is uncertainty. We can count on change. We can count on impermanence, you know, all of those. That's what life is. It's ever moving. It's ever changing. And if we try to be too stuck and too much in control of our environment, of life, of conditions, it creates this place of suffering and resistance.
So, Roberta, are you proposing that Charles has made friends with his stress?
I think he has, yes. And he didn't even know it.
He didn't even realize it, did he?
This is the beauty of learning every day, right? You learn something new all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's like getting to know a new neighbor. You figure out how your barometer is set, and then you can change that barometer over time through practice. And without mindfulness, you don't really have a choice, because you're not aware that there are choices to be made and that you do have the ability to change your response to conditions.
You know, you said that your clients are literally everywhere. Mm-hmm. Denmark. I mean, Denmark's a beautiful place. Have you been to?
I haven't. No, yeah. She just found me, so it was exciting.
You need to tell her you're going to do an in-person session in Denmark, and yeah. You'll love it. But how do you spend your days? Like, what is a typical? I shouldn't say typical day. What's a typical week like for you? As you interact with clients, as you prepare for, a podcast or prepare for, I know you've got Peaceful Living TV. Like, what is a week like for you?
I am in the process of creating flow in my schedule and having more ownership over my time. And this is my work in progress currently, but an average week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays are teaching days for me. And then half a day Friday. Thursdays I leave open for networking. And during COVID, I took up golfing for the first time in my life. So my golf league will be starting here in a couple of weeks. I'm terrible at it, but
you have to get DJ back on a golf course. He'll give you some lessons too.
Okay. Yeah. I need all of the help that I can get. So I schedule in some time for self-care. Wednesday afternoons tends to be my wellness time. If I need to have health appointments, things to take care of myself, I do those on Wednesdays. Monday afternoons, I do clients. And then I scatter the podcasts in where I have openings in my schedule between private clients. So that's kind of my flow right now. And then creating content, interacting with people on social media. I try to make myself available if people have questions specifically to their own needs. I've had people reach out, having foot pain and asking me something that they could do for that. People who aren't sleeping very well. So I really like to make myself available through social media. And so many people will say social media is not a happy place, but I think I must be inviting happy energy into my social media feed because the people who reach out to me tend to be genuine and truly engaged and wanting to learn or support in some way. So that's a blessing in itself.
Yeah, it sounds like it. What does self-care look like for you?
All of my rituals are self-care for me. So every morning I spend time on skincare. I've added some facial massage into my skincare routine. That's the time when I am all by myself and just with myself, thinking, creating. I do a lot of creating while I'm in the ritual of getting ready each day. During the afternoon, I'll make a cup of tea after lunch and sit at least for 5 minutes. Now that the weather is getting nicer, I'll sit outside or take my dogs out in the front yard and watch them play. I take a yoga class and a Pilates class once a week for myself. I listen to podcasts. I reach out to people I care about and try to nourish the relationships that are important to me. And then I do go for massages. I get my nails done at times. Those are more of the luxuries, though. I use a journal. I do journaling every day. And sometimes that's just writing down one sentence, It's none of my practices have become rigid where, like, I have to do the same things all of the time. And then I have a bedtime routine. Around 8 o'clock every night, I take a shower. And again, sometimes I'll take a hot bath, Epsom salts, whatever it is that my body needs to wind down and to get quiet. I dim the lights. I put on a diffuser. It's like I do so many things. But these are things that, as I'm talking about it, it's like there is a lot that I do. But again, this has been grown throughout my lifetime, right? It's not like one day I decided or I resolved, like, I'm going to create a bedtime routine. I'm going to create a morning routine. I'm going to use a diffuser every day. I'm going to write in my journal. It didn't happen that way. And I feel like what I bring to my clients is that inspiration of one small shift. Like for you, adding meditation was a huge support for your overall health and wellness, but it was one thing. If you were to try to take all of my rituals and put them into your life, you would be like, this does not feel nurturing or nourishing.
I do feel like I need to add like a bath, like a flowers and a candle.
Just all these little things. In my hot bath, I usually take it once a week, and I'll take it on a day that my muscles are feeling more tired and achy, or like I said, I've been in front of my screen too much and my energy is like way up high. Those Epsom salts and hot water can just bring things down. So through experimentation, I know how to bring my vibration into a place where I feel more at peace. And that's what I like to help people find for themselves is, you know, what can we add to just downshift things a little bit so that you don't feel that constant vibration and buzz of life taking over you.
So your life sounds like a Hallmark movie. I mean, like that's what
Oh, and I walk my Doberman every single day, and I got him from the Arizona Doberman Rescue. So I'll give them a little shout out. They are the best rescue that I've ever interacted with in my life. So
which location?
Right there in the valley. I didn't know that they had more than one location.
I thought they did.
So Desert Harbor Doberman Rescue.
Okay.
That's the name of the organization. And I've rescued one dog through them. My sister's rescued three. My parents have rescued one. They're an amazing organization. And so Mikey, my Doberman, he's my spirit animal. He gets me out for a walk every day, even when it's 17 degrees here in Denver. You know, I put on my parka and get out with him. So
now, how old was little Mikey when you rescued him?
He was 10 months old.
Oh wow. Okay.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and he'll be 9 this August. And, you know, he has actually taught me a lot about anxiety and trauma, because in those 10 months of his life, I don't know, you know, he had a woman owner. We know that. She was by herself and older. I don't know if she would hit on his cage. We don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. But even now to this day at 9 years old, if he hears the sound of metal, I drop a pan in the kitchen. You know, he heads upstairs to hide. And so, you know, trauma can really rewire the nervous system, not only for humans, but for animals as well.
Yeah.
There will be times we're out on our walk and he'll just sit down. Something, you know, has him not feeling like things are okay. I'm not going to try to coax him differently. So we just, you know, turn around, we go in the next direction. And it's really interesting, you know, to see without all of the humanness that comes with anxiety, how anxiety can still show up for people who have experienced trauma or stress to a point, you know, stress can create trauma in a person's life if you don't have a way to relieve yourself from it.
Do you think that stress can also create, and I think you said, you use the right word, trauma, but manifest itself in terms of pain in the body?
Absolutely. Thoughts become things. So usually when we're stressed, we go into limiting beliefs, negative self-talk, negative thinking, you know, things aren't okay, they're never going to be okay. That can lead to depression. That can lead to things being stored in the body. Acupuncture and yin yoga, you know, all of our organs are connected to our meridian system through our connective tissue. And especially in the heart center, you know, things can get stored. You'll start to actually see physically people start to become more caved in their heart. Opening them up can create a lot of fear, tears, worry. All of those emotions are released as we release the things in the physical body. In the hips, we store a lot of anger. So people who have hip tension and tightness, when you start to release that, they might start to feel agitated, frustrated, unsettled.
So that's what that problem in my hip is.
I can help you with that.
Figure that out.
Man, I know that. Let's figure it out.
Yeah. I need it. I'll tell you, my hip has been bugging me for weeks. Mm-hmm. So where do you get your, like, it sounds like to me that you consume a lot of information that is, you know, allowing you to have this type of understanding and knowledge. Where do you get that from? Do you read books? Is it magazines? What is it that you take in to give you this sort of insight?
It has really been a human experience over the years, taking yoga classes, doing a lot of listening, a lot of self-experimentation. You know, I heard this, how does it feel? And then reading about it to understand it more, especially with the nervous system and anxiety. I've been very curious over the last few years. In a yin yoga practice, like, how can we nudge up against those levels of stimulation in a way that could be helpful and healthy without getting overwhelmed and without wanting to run in the other direction? So you have to be very, I don't want to say cautious, because that to me creates a sense of, you know, tightening up or tensing. Nurturing would probably be the best word. You have to be nurturing through your exploration of things that create a reaction in your body, whether it's physically, mentally, or emotionally. And when you can approach those reactions with curiosity and explore them, they kind of lose their power and you gain power through the process. So most of my learning comes from exploring and practicing, listening, reading, talking to people, asking questions, like, what did that feel like for you? And hearing the words that they share is really important. I was actually just in a workshop this past weekend with an instructor, and one of the people in our workshop, she said, oh, well, that hurt. And the teacher said, is hurt the word? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't like, and I loved how she asked it, because sometimes we become so alert and so engaged in what we feel in our bodies that everything feels like pain. And we really can't differentiate pain from stretching, from sensation. You know, sensation is very deep and colorful in our bodies. And if you only look at the superficial sensation, you might react to it, move away from it, and never have the opportunity to explore it or discover it. So the yin yoga practice for me is that, okay, well, let's nudge up against it and just settle in and stay. You know, what is this? What does it feel like? What's there to learn, to hear, to understand?
You know, it's interesting. I use a couple of different meditation apps. One is by Joe Dispenza. I'm not sure if you have heard of him, but he talks a lot about the nervous system as well. And how that really regulates the body in a lot of ways. How to use meditation as a way to sort of, the central nervous system can really be focused on, you know, not living in the past, but moving into like the future and what you're really trying to accomplish for yourself. But then the other thing is I use Headspace from time to time, and they have there's different sort of meditations. And I came across one for pain management for this sort of back hip thing that I've got. And it really does talk about some of the things you talk about in terms of just allowing yourself to just notice, as opposed to, you know, to be curious, to notice, not to try to fight it, not to try to, you know, wish it away, if you will, but more or less to just sit in it, notice, and allow it to sort of dissipate on its own. If it does, if it doesn't, it's just a part of what you're experiencing in the moment, and being at peace with that. And I find that really helpful.
Yeah. You know, and that goes back to our discussion about impermanence. All things are impermanent, even sensation. If you can be with it and sit with it, something new is going to come in, and it gives you more integrity to know and understand what sensation in your body means to you, because then you can perform at a level without fear. If you know discomfort differently than pain, not everything is going to show up as pain. So if it's discomfort, where is that discomfort possibly coming from? Is there anything that you can shift or change or acquire in a skill set to help it rather than doing more harm? You know, if we turn away from pain, we actually have the ability to do more harm over the long run because we're just pushing it away rather than exploring it.
Yeah, so wow. So that sounds like some implications for emotional intelligence too, which is awesome.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So we're unfortunately coming to a close.
Wow, that's good.
I feel like I could talk to you guys forever.
No. Well, we can make it happen again. Same. Is there anything you'd either like to ask us or that we may have missed that you'd like to share with us?
I guess I would ask the two of you, you know, you said that you had this podcast born during COVID. What is the spirit of your desire to put this information out the way that you do? Because when I listen to your podcast, it's so conversational. You have such a variety of guests on your show. And what inspired you to just to bring this to the world in the way that you do?
We just both pointed at each other.
You know, for me personally, I think it's, you know, once you go through certain aspects of your life journey, you feel like you've learned some things. And I think there's a desire to share that with, you know, kindred spirits, Charles and I, and then in a sort of unified fashion, share it with a broader audience, hear more stories around topics that are important to us. And hopefully, you know, if we can add some value and some intellect to a world which is often not so emotionally intelligent, then I feel like, you know, we're adding value. So for me personally, that was a big part of it.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think it comes down to, you know, one, when you begin a relationship sometimes and you start to have dialogue and conversation, if you're paying attention, you can understand the richness of what's happening in the moment. And I think when DJ and I met and started to get to know one another and have these conversations and realize that, man, what we're both thinking and talking about, these are things that I'm sure a lot of people are sort of have ruminating in their minds about life, whether it's, you know, the things, the pillars that we have, race, business, culture, politics. And there's a story beneath all of that, right? And so we felt like if we could bring this to a conversation that other people could be a part of, and that we could share these stories with others and learn about the lives that others are living and what has helped them or what has led them to a particular place, that to DJ's point, I think we'd be sharing and giving people an opportunity to hear, wow, that's an amazing story and it's inspiring and it can lead me to perhaps my best life, my ability to flourish, to live in an emotionally intelligent way that allows me to be better each and every day. And I think that's what's sort of gotten us to a place where we really thought, hey, this is something that we could actually articulate to others and bring some real value.
Well, you are doing a wonderful job, and thank you for having the heart and the desire to bring it to more people, because whenever I listen to you guys, your voices, like, you even help to just bring the vibration to a very calm place, regardless of the guests that you have in front of you. So I don't know that you are aware that you both have that gift, but thank you.
That's very kind.
Thank you. I got to tell you, like, this has been fantastic. I had no idea that we were, like, going up against time and that this time flew by so quickly. And it's just been a pleasure getting to know you and hearing how you think and the perspectives on life and how you live your life. I think that's super inspiring too. So we're just grateful for the time together.
So if you ever come to Arizona, I can't promise we'll go to Sierra Vista.
Well, my parents live in Tucson now and my sister lives there in Phoenix. So I do come home. Just not between now and October anymore.
It just hit 99 degrees yesterday, the other day, and I was like, oh my gosh, we're here already.
Well, when you do, maybe it'll be an excuse for me to get Charles out on the golf course.
Yeah, That'd be fun.
Well, I would love that.
Actually, that was a great
I've been thinking about organizing a yoga retreat over there at the Phoenician. So maybe I'll work with you guys to make that happen.
DJ and I both live probably within, say, a
not even 5 minutes.
Not even 5 minutes. It's probably a, you know, for DJ, you know, probably a good driver. You know, he could probably hit a driver.
He could hit it with a golf ball.
He could hit it to he could easily for sure.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're both very close to the Phoenician. So anything we can do, we'd love to help.
We'd love to.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. I would love to stay in connection with you, and I'll continue to listen to your podcast. I'd like to offer your listeners 30% off any of the services I offer on Peaceful Living. I like to create customized plans for people to help them with the development of empathy and self-awareness, emotional intelligence.
Does that apply? Does that discount apply to DJ and I as well?
I'm going to give you guys an even better one. So I'll reach out to you through email and send that along your way.
That sounds great. We'll take you up on it.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Loretta, take care. It's a pleasure.
It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on tcvpodcast.com.